Good morning, everybody. My name is Nick Cuneo, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here. I want to thank Toby and Brian and Nick and the rest of the members of the group for giving me this opportunity to do what I love doing, which is talk about the gift of recovery as it pertains to my experience in my endeavors to stay clean and sober. I'm going to lose this jacket. It's a little bit warm up here, so. Would you?
Take that for you?
That's very nice of you. And Dan said that what a view this is, and I'm just going to, if you don't mind, I'm just going to kind of take it. If I can figure it out. Smile. Anyway, before I begin, I'd like to also acknowledge a milestone in a very dear friend of mine's recovery journey, who's got 4 years today, Shane, who I, he's a hell of a guy and a business partner and a friend of mine, and hello. Thank you. So Shane, you know, a special day that I get this opportunity. So again, congratulations. But I came across a prayer last night I'd like to read to you before I begin. My assignment today is to cover steps 1, 2, and 3, which is kind of where it all begins, obviously, and I'm fortunate to be able to cover this material. It's always a blessing for me. So I was moved to read this to you, and here's the simple prayer. God, we invite you into this room to guide and direct each of us as we seek your truth. Please set aside within each of us that which would block us off from the truth. Lay aside our prejudices about what we think we know about this process, this meeting, and our spiritual condition. Remove our fears that we may hear your truth through the members of this group, and give us strength and courage to share your truth with each other in a real spirit of love and compassion for our fellow man. Amen. And what I didn't realize that when I came into recovery after a lifetime of chasing outside stuff for internal pleasures and relief points, that I was raised to seek power. From a very young age, we instill in our youth and our young people that to go out and be successful and to be the best you can be, and through the accumulation of accolades and diplomas and positions and power and spouses and cars and material stuff, that's somehow going to give us this satisfaction. So I grew up chasing things, and when things didn't go my way, I acted much like a child. And so through the course of my drinking career, I came from a normal family, great family that really didn't have much dysfunction in it. But at the end of the day, at age 38, I found myself as a licensed professional for 17 years doing my job, but alcohol started to take over. And if you think about your own journey on why you're here or how it led to your awakening that you might have a problem, or maybe you're here and you're trying to figure this all out, that's okay too. My sobriety date is July 26th, year 2000. And the only thing, by the way, I've been able to do more often than not on point than off is stay clean and sober. I'm not perfect. I make all sorts of mistakes. This is just about my experience on when it kind of came to a capitulation point, where I had to get my arms around the thought, the proposition, that I had to come to the last rooms, the last house on the block to solve this issue. So I tried every other house, by the way, before I ended up in the rooms of recovery. But before that happened, life was good. I was succeeding in life, had the job, had the career, had the things that I was trained and groomed to go out and get. I come from an area in New York that is full of power people. So I grew up aspiring to be like them, to have material well-being and all that stuff. But evidently, all that those things wasn't fulfilling me here, right? So I was grinding, and I was working, I was drinking more, and my drinking career started to prove too much for me, although I was the last to know it. So I sought through some help with my partners at work and my profession. They pushed me out of the office, pushed me out of my partnership. At age 38, my 17-year professional career was going down the tubes. My wife, the love of my life at the time, was leaving me because I couldn't stay sober. And she was struggling with the fact that, what did I marry? My family was looking on in horror as they were watching from the sidelines as I was kind of continuing to try to figure this out. And I was prone or plagued with defiance, denial, and I was in rebelliousness. I was so rebellious and defiant with the mere thought of me having a drinking problem. I couldn't fathom that. I couldn't get my arms around how powerless I was. So I went to treatment, left treatment at 38 days at a beautiful place in Palm Beach. It was a resort. It was a wonderful place. The best people that are in the industry were trying to give me the understanding of my conception or the problem, and I went back home after 2 days and drank. And that happened in quick succession 3 other times where I sought treatment immediately after leaving treatment. Maybe you guys can relate to that. Maybe you're not a treatment person, but if you certainly think about the first time you tried to stop on your own and then swore that I wasn't going to do it, if you were like me, and you meant what you said, and if they had given you a lie detector test at that time, you would have passed because that was the truth. But I didn't understand the concept of powerlessness. I didn't understand that I suffered from an internal condition that was driving me, unknown to me, to do this. Like I couldn't connect those dots. It was just outside my understanding. I couldn't get my arms around it. I was looking at it intellectually. From my life's experience, my professional career, problem-solving techniques, I just didn't understand it. And my experience over 20 years of this journey is that most people suffer from the same thing. They are unable at that time to really grasp the gravity of the situation, the pickle that they're in. And if they're like me, they're going to take that easier, softer way and balk at the 12 propositions that they make on the wall in any 12-step recovery house. So I go to treatment, fail, go back home, I get a DUI, get forced to treatment, that type of thing. Finally, the judge throws the book at me and says, you're a menace to society, you're going back till they tell you you're leaving. You know, and there was an event that I went to outside of recovery or the 12-step rooms that kind of changed everything and shifted it. And I went back to treatment. I was just, it was different. So I guess through my failed attempts, I had enough, like an aha moment, right? I had tried on my own power many times. It didn't work. I sought human solution and comfort and understanding through other people, and that didn't help me stop it. I was hoping that would do. I was eyeing the 12 steps on the wall and didn't truly understand how to make them all come together. Conceptually and intellectually, I could read them, and of course, I'm sure most people in this room can read, and if you can't, that's okay too. There's a solution in this all, there's a way to work through it. But the point was, I was looking at that and saying, yeah, I'll do some of these and won't do some and everything else. And overall, I come out of treatment in North Miami Beach where I got sober I'm a couple months treatment and I'm a meaty maker. I have a sponsor in name only. He's not a big book fundamentalist. He's a beach guy, a water guy, telling you to stick the big book up your butt. You know, he didn't, you know, that was his idea. You didn't get sick overnight, you didn't get well overnight, and that's kind of what I bought into. And then, though, I came across a guy at a meeting that transformed my life forever. And this is really what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the transformative power of getting your arms around and owning what the discussion is. Like, until I owned my drinking in a form that I couldn't solve it on my own, nothing could really happen. No magic could really happen. I might just be able to accumulate some sober time. Emotionally, I'd be like this. And I was wondering why some people in the recovery rooms seem to be okay no matter what's going on. They seem to be above all the fray. Like, their life's going on and stuff's happening and life is showing up in their life, and they're just like this. It's okay. They're smiling. They're giggling. And I'm this emotional live wire. I'm sober for a couple months. My we that I got out of treatment with in North Miami Beach are falling like flies. We're all meeting makers. We all have sponsors in name only. We're not engaging with them. We're not in the material. So really what we were, just kind of coasting, thinking like it's going to magically strike us because we're in the rooms of recovery. And I'm not saying that magic doesn't happen here. I believe this is the house of magic. I think miracles happen here every day. My experience is miracles happen in these rooms to people that are interested in solving this and going through a process with a guarantee at the end of it that you'll have a spiritual awakening as a result of this linear process that's not as difficult as we all conceive it is. I think we do ourselves a disservice in recovery. I'm just going to say this and take it for what it is. I think we do a disservice in talking about how difficult it is. And a lot of time the people that talk about how difficult it is are people that haven't gone through the process. My experience was once I was willing to go through that process, it wasn't that hard at all. It was, how do you get from point A to point B? Like, how do you get that? Who do you fall into, and who's going to be the teacher that understands how this material is? So let me say this. My hat goes off to everybody in this room for being here today. It's a beautiful day. They're tearing up South Florida, South Tampa right now, having a good old time, you know. And we're here just trying to improve and get better, and people have donated their time coming from across the state to come here. So my hat goes off to everybody here, particularly though, even more so to the people that spend the time to study this material and dedicate their life to teaching other people. The working with others that the book talks about. Helping that person uncover, see the magic, start connecting, helping them connect the dots that right now are out of focus for some. And when you fall, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So what happened was I show up at one day at a West Dixie Club in North Miami Beach. There's a guy at the podium. He's got his hat on backwards. He's got a flower shirt. I'm sitting there. I know who he is. He's kind of a big deal in North Miami Beach. He's the brother of the guy that tells you to stick it up your thing, who does nothing. And this guy goes from the podium, and he's ripping it. And I can't deny what he's saying. Everything he is saying is like, pew, pew, pew. I'm like, he's talking about working the steps and the guarantees and the things that are promised in there. And I did make a decision, so I'm going to go up to him and serpentine my way around him because I don't have the courage to walk up to him and look him in the eye. I go up to him, and I have my hands in my pocket kicking pebbles, and I mumble, can you help me? So he says, get in the truck. He says, I'll be happy to. He gleams and lights up like a Christmas tree. He looks around, and he says, come on, let's go. I said, go where? He goes, we're going now. He said, where are we going? He says, we're going to go do some work. I said, yeah, but not today because I got a volleyball game on the beach in Hollywood with the girls. I'm a regular on Sunday volleyball. He says, get in the truck. I said, okay. You know, and he set the tone from that point forward with me about how this relationship was going to be. I wanted what he had. He had the knowledge, the expertise through practice and being taught well on how to go through this work. And he promised me, he says, Nick, it'll lay out like you won't believe. It'll be so easy, even you can do it. I said, great. And so sure enough, we get in the truck and he starts asking me these questions about when I honestly wanted to, could I quit entirely? And when drinking or drugging, did I have little over the control I took? And on my own power, could I control the stopping and starting? And based on my experience, did I have sufficient reason to stop? Did I think I could stop for good on my own power? If I did, why haven't I done so yet? Is it possible from my experience, is it not working the way you're doing it? Am I having trouble with personal relationships? Are the bedevilments on page 52 what happens to me and why is probably being driven to drink? Like I have stuff going on in me that drives me to do this. The donut eater is driven to eat donuts. The gambler is driven to do this. It's an internal condition that we have that we don't even see because it's not in the conscious level of our mind. So when you look for it, you're not going to see it. And I was like, oh, what you're saying is perfect sense. He asked me if I could control my emotional nature. He asked if I was full of fear. Was I unhappy? I said yes. And you know, the first portion of the book is all about the first step, the why, the how comes, the making you relate. So let me say beforehand, he had asked me this question, had I read the book? And I told him yes, which was true. He says, good, that's all we need to know. What I later found out, of course, and as I have people that I work with now, it's an assignment. They read the book, they lay aside their prejudice, they say a little prayer, inviting God in each time. And they go through the book in the hopes that they're starting to see the similarities, not the differences. And we have some discussions, just like he did of me. I'm qualifying them. He was qualifying me. And every time he would ask me a question, I would admit what he was saying. It just came out of me. There was no effort involved for me. So finally, he took me to the top of page. He took me to this passage in chapter 3, more about alcoholism. He says, most of us have been willing to admit that we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. This is, of course, on top of page 30. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts. You know, how many times did I try to stop on my own, thinking that I had some power that I didn't have? Remember, I was raised to think I have power, but I don't have power to stop drinking. It's now evident. I want to stop. I swear I'll stop. I have all sorts of consequences coming my way, and I have all sorts of good stuff waiting for me if only I can stop, but I can't stop. The idea that somehow, someday, I will control, keyword, control, and enjoy. So I was able, when I drink, I'd always start out with the control portion. So I came into recovery drinking a quart of liquor a day. I go to treatment for a little while, I'm sober a little while, and if I start again, I'm gonna have a drink or two and then delude myself into thinking, look, the sky didn't fall. But the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body kicks in, and pretty soon I'm worse off than I ever was. So can I control? And if I'm controlling it, I'm damn sure not enjoying it, because I really don't want to have two drinks. I want more. Two becomes four, and then I'm closing the place. That was my MO. The great obsession of every abnormal drinker, the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity of death. So here's the question, the first step proposition. It says, we've learned, so it's a twofold first step. We've learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics and addicts. This is the first step of recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. So delusion, illusion, smash, and concede. So my life, I'm powerless over my substance of choice, dash. There is unmanageability in my life. Now, there's two types of unmanageability. There is the obvious stuff, like I've been arrested, I'm getting pushed out of my partnership after 17 years, my wife is leaving me. That's the obvious. That's the easy to see. The one you don't see is the unmanageability of the internal condition that drives me to drink in the bedevilments that I talked about before. On page 52. So it's the bedevilments that drive the uncomfortability, which force me into thinking about drinking. The obsession has me thinking about it, thinking I'm going to get relief. I can't stand the pressure, and I do that move. Have I done that enough times? Has someone helped me connect the dots? Has someone helped me connect the dots that it's the internal condition that's the issue, and the symptom is my move? And then if you want to stop this, we have a process in this fellowship, the 12 steps. Bill Wilson said that the primary purpose of a 12-step group was the practice and teaching of the 12 steps. So I came into a clubhouse where there were a couple people practicing the 12 steps, and other people were getting together for social reasons. I met that guy, and all of a sudden that group changed. I changed that group. He directed me to other types of groups. He directed me to 12-step groups, big book studies, not just open stuff, basket, stuff like that. He wanted me to go find the people that were interested in really getting down to the nitty-gritty of how to solve this once and for all for good. So when he asked me that question, had I learned enough, I was like, yeah, I can totally admit that I'm powerless over alcohol, and my life is a sugar show. I mean, I just torched a 17-year career in New York. I'm down in Miami trying to find my footing. My family is hoping for the best but don't know what to expect. Even they were women of faith. It was very easy for me to do that. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Lack of power was my dilemma. I had to find a power, because someone said, Nick, you're not the power. You don't think you're the power. I was like, no, I don't think I'm the power. He says, well, if you're not the power, there must be a power. I was like, you're right. The book talks about as soon as we could admit that, as soon as we understood that we were not the power, great progress can be made. Main object is to find, enable you to find power, which will solve your problem. We know how to find God because it's within us. We've been fooling ourselves. Deep down in every human being is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it is there. So I lack power, dash, my life is unmanageable. They made it very clear that Nick, at 6 foot tall, 200 pounds, you don't think you're the power of the universe, do you? Well, no. I mean, that's obvious, duh. So you concede that there may be something up there. Maybe you don't understand what it is. Maybe it's the spirit of the universe. Maybe it's the sun, it's the moon, it's the tides. You can use a group of drunks. There was a guy down there, Russell Vining, God bless him, down in North Miami Beach. It's his pickup truck. He came in, his pickup truck was his higher power. It worked for him. Guy was sober a long time, and I think that was just a ruse to tell the newcomer just how easy it is to find anything other than you that will work. It'll change over time. The clarity of your thinking will come to you. The more you mind this, the more the clarity comes. It's like the first you couldn't see the dots. Now the dots start coming into focus. The more you study this, the more you mine this, the more you're working with others, the more and more clarity becomes to you. And why should we find God? Because here are thousands of men and women who have found God. Everybody in recovery is giving these same propositions, by the way. Millions of people before you have come to the same points, these forks in the road, if you will, to understand that willpower won't do it, fear of consequences won't do it, that you gotta wanna do this because you have a moment of clarity and you say, you know what, I'm gonna go after it. Seize the day, seize the opportunity. Self-diagnosis won't work. Which brought me, once I could admit there was a power greater than myself, I was at such a dead end that he made a proposition to me. He says, you know, you have to get to a point where you believe God is everything or else he's nothing. He says, from your history, obviously you don't have the solution. And I was desperate to get clean and sober at age 38 years old. I was just desperate. So I was willing to take that leap of faith. It wasn't a leap of experience. It wasn't a leap of knowledge. It was a leap of faith. And thank God I was desperate enough because it wasn't that difficult. And I've had to make hundreds of them since. But that was the first one I ever made in my life, and boy, was that a great one. So I come to the point where I now admit I'm powerless over alcohol, my life is unmanageable, and I have to understand that what I like to do is I like to run the show. I'm a control freak. I like power. I think I have power. I want to control everything. It's my way or the highway, even though I don't even know I'm doing it. Talks about the three pertinent ideas, A, B, C, and how it works. At the end of it, that I'm convinced that any life on self-will can hardly be a success. The following page, it goes on to tell me that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my trouble. That I am myself, me in the center of it, all my me is my problem. That I have to get rid of that or else it's going to kill me. It's going to continue to haunt me. I've got to get a power in my life that is not there at present. Says we make all sorts of problems for other people, but we never think so. So to boil it down, and by the way, I'm trying to present these things in a way that's simple and just touching on some points. Of course, with a teacher, you'll go more in depth leading up to these things. I don't have the time. I've got a certain amount of time to present this material. I want to make sure I cover all three points. So the bottom line, if you're a bottom line person, like if you come in here and say, I need to understand this before I'll take that leap, here's the bottom line it tells you, is that the problem is you. You lack power. You need power. And the reason you don't have power is because you are the power. It's all about you. But when you boil it down, if you're willing to, and it tells you how to do that, right? The steps are the way to do this. So I have power. I don't have power. I come to the belief in a power greater than me. I'm not sure what it is. It's a very loose concept. And when I go through that part of the book, it talks about God is the He is the principal, we are his agent, he is the father, we are the son. And this ends up, this decision that I'm gonna make in step three, the decision to do this, not become the power anymore, it's like a seesaw. If you guys know what seesaws are, psh, I make a decision, I get to the third step prayer. That's the kicker. Reciting the third step prayer humbly and honestly. When you parse the third step prayer, which means you don't highlight this way, I'm a believer in breaking down paragraphs and sentences to make them really pop out. So if you go through the third step prayer, what'll happen is you'll start to see what you're pledging. You're saying, God, do this for me. I have nothing to offer except me. Do this for me, fix me, help me fix my, help me let this process work in my life, and I'll make this commitment. You do this for me and I'll do this for you. So you're making a deal, a covenant with the one that has the power, that you're gonna continue on this journey and you're gonna continue to try to help your fellows behind you and to your sides, your brothers and sisters, as best you can as you go forward in life. that you're going to continue to make these progresses. And what happens is, here's the rub, and understand it as best as I have tried. I make a pledge with the one that has the power, the creator of it all. I get this wonderful feeling of relief as soon as I take the burdens of the world off my shoulders. I'm a mere mortal. That's all I'm supposed to be. That's always ever designed to be. Just another guy of the group. Nothing special. All I do is I'm fired up. I get enthusiastic about recovery because I remember how blind I had been, and now I'm starting to see when I make this decision. And it's an unbelievable decision. It was the greatest decision I ever made. Now, is the first step done perfectly? I don't know. I probably didn't do it perfectly. Second step, I didn't do it perfectly. Third step, I struggle with it all the time. I like power. So it's this thing going on in my life. My will, God's will, my will, God's will. That doesn't change. But for the most part, all that is behind me. And then what happens is it tells you, if you do that at once, a feeling of relief will come over you, which was my experience. And I'm sure there's a lot of head nodders in this room right now that are relating to that. So that's a brief summary of steps one, powerless over alcohol, twofold part. My life is unmanageable both externally and internally. I have to come to believe that a power greater than me is the only option left that I have. And how do I do that? Is I get to a point where I'm willing to take that leap of faith because others before me had done so as well. So I want to thank you all for your time. I appreciate you guys being here. I'm looking forward to the fellow speakers and the keynote speakers later. So thank you very much.